Good afternoon and welcome to Living Room. I'm your host, Chris Welch. On today's Living Room, we address the conflict between KPFA and Pacifica National. Can a progressive radio network survive and grow in today's media monopoly world? Can it survive the pressures of the marketplace? Can it survive the pressures of disagreements within its own body? We'll be back with our guests, including Larry Bensky, live and in color, and your phone calls right after news headlines with Eileen Alfandari.
NATO's two top officials are in Kosovo for their first visit to review the alliance's peacekeeping mission. Supreme Commander General Wesley Clark and Secretary General Javier Solana were cheered wildly by crowds of Kosovo Albanians upon their arrival. Clark told a news agency that mounting evidence of atrocities by Serb forces provided vindication for the airstrikes that drove them from Kosovo. The two men went into meetings with NATO's Kosovo commander, who briefed them on the situation facing alliance forces following the withdrawal of Serb police and soldiers. A new report suggests a CIA analyst warned in advance that the U.S. might be targeting the wrong building in Belgrade last month, the one that turned out to be the Chinese embassy. The Washington Post says the warning was never passed on to higher-level officials. The paper cites a classified internal report by the CIA's inspector general. It says the analyst was familiar with the intended target, a Yugoslav arms agency. He reportedly told colleagues that planners might be aiming at the wrong building, but the paper says his concerns were never raised to senior levels before the embassy was bombed. Three Chinese reporters were killed in the May 7th attack. 20 other people were hurt. Attorney General Janet Reno reportedly instructed a top aide to inquire why the Berkeley police didn't more aggressively pursue arrests against protesters outside of the Pacifica offices next to KPFA on Monday. Reno's directive may have come at the instigation of Pacifica Board Chair Mary Frances Berry, who was appointed by President Clinton to chair the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. Berkeley's police chief has told KPFA he received a call from a federal official who told him Attorney General Janet Reno had been asked to inquire about the Monday arrests. He suggested that a Pacifica board member may have made the request. The American Medical Association has voted to back the formation of a national union of doctors to give the profession more leverage with managed care companies. The vote by the AMA's policymaking body came after almost 2 hours of impassioned debate yesterday, the fourth day of the group's annual five-day meeting. Whether doctors could have a union and also be professionals was a main point of debate. The Red Cross is warning of a new era of what it calls super disasters. In a report being released this morning, the agency says last year was the grimmest year on record for natural disasters, with tens of thousands of people killed and $90 billion in damage. The Red Cross says with global warming, a growing population, and environmental degradation, things could get a lot worse. It says as the number and scope of disasters increase, aid for poor countries, including insurance coverage, is shrinking. The report urges governments to spend more on disaster preparation. I'm Eileen Alfandari. News returns on KPFA at 3:30 with Pacifica Network News. News headlines at 4 and 5, the one-hour edition of the KPFA Evening News at 6. Stay tuned for Living Room with Chris Welch.
Welcome back to Living Room. I'm Chris Welch. The industry of radio, they say, is worth an estimated $15 billion plus a year. Public radio's portion of that $15 billion is an estimated $500 million. KPFA's annual budget is under $2 million. The number of people who actually listen to KPFA is in relative proportion to those dollar figures. These factoids are offered to put this institution in the context of the so-called real world. Of course, the impact and value of KPFA, as well as of its parent, Pacifica, is estimated at far greater, many times more than its budget dollars. The impact on politics, on culture, on society has been measured many times over its 50-year history at far beyond its physical size. KPFA and Pacifica appear to be at a crossroads, a moment of truth as to the future. And on Living Room today, we're going to be talking about direction, about context, about decision-making. And our guests, I'm happy to say, first of all, Larry Benske returns to the program he initiated here on KPFA Living Room. Larry Benske, welcome back, my dear.
Yes, and hearing that music certainly makes it feel like old home week.
Theme songs, don't they push the buttons?
They push a lot of buttons.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to have this button pushed once again. I just wanted to let listeners know, Chris, that you have, and other programmers on KPFA, have many times invited me on over the last couple of months since I was fired, to talk about Kosovo, to talk about Mumia, to talk about, God help us, Bush Gore. And I've said no to all those occasions because I have not wanted to make it seem like there's some air of normalcy to my appearance on this station or anything about this appearance and this station these days. Nothing is normal. This is a state of crisis. I don't know if whether to call it unprecedented or not, but it's a state of crisis, and I'm glad I'm here to discuss that.
It feels unprecedented to me for 27 years. I mean, it feels like pretty big. So, also joining us as guest on the telephone, we have Ralph Engelman. He's a professor of journalism. He's chair of the journalism department at the Brooklyn campus of Long Island University. He's also on the George Polk Award Selection Committee, et cetera, et cetera. Very happy to have him joining us. He's written a book, The Public Radio and Television in America, A Political History. Ralph Engelman, welcome to Living Room.
I should also add that I am a Pacifica person as well, having been on the WBAI local board for a long time. I mean, not presently, but for many years, chair of that board and on the national board in the 1970s.
Good perspective. That's very good. I thank you for joining us. And speaking of local boards and chairs, we have the chair of KPFA's local advisory board, Sherry Gendelman, joining us on the telephone. Good morning to you. Good afternoon to you, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Chris, Larry, and Ralph.
So, Sherry, in fact, I'd like to start with you with the news story of where we are right now. We just heard the headlines talking about Janet Reno. And I understand there are lawsuits that have been filed. Could you tell us, the National Board is about to meet. Could you tell us when that meeting is, what they're likely to address, and just sort of a thumbnail sketch of the atmosphere in which they're going to be meeting here? You have 25 words or less.
Yeah, really. Well, I think very difficult soon. They're going to be, the meetings begin on this Friday, the 25th of June, in Washington, D.C., at the Embassy Suites Hotel. Most of the sessions from the agenda that I have received are going to be close to the public and or in executive session. I presume that our representatives from the Bay Area and other governing board members will raise issues of the ongoing conflict between the Pacifica Foundation and its member stations. There's no doubt in my mind that they will be addressed at this meeting, though the agenda deals with the 50th anniversary, the strategic plan, which ends next year, the finances of the station, which are conducted in executive session, etc. The financial...
Of this station that we're talking over.
Yes, and of the Pacifica Foundation in general.
Okay.
In terms of the lawsuit, the only one that I know about at this point, which is at a particular stage, is a lawsuit that a demand letter has been sent to the Pacifica Foundation, and their lawyer, Mr. Creighton, has responded to it. The demand letter says that a lawsuit would be filed in the name of some, but not all, the members of local advisory boards from three of the stations, WBAI in New York, KPFA in Berkeley, and KPFK in Los Angeles. And the lawsuit seeks to undo changes to the bylaws of the organization that basically eliminated from participation selection of members on the governing board, the local advisory boards. And therefore, what the changes have done is further isolate the national board and create a board that is self-perpetuating without input from the community radio stations. Since our demand letter was responded to prior to the date on the letter, which was June 25th, the lawsuit will not be filed on that date. But if we do not receive a satisfactory response to the letter requesting that the changes be reversed, then the lawsuit will be filed. I also want to say that we have had contact with Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi's office, and a letter has been faxed to her office requesting an inquiry into reports that Dr. Mary Frances Berry, the chairperson of the foundation, may have used the influence of her office to get the Justice Department to intervene and to some degree harass the Police Department of Berkeley. I feel that I have to even protect the Police Department of Berkeley now. Pacifica has gotten so out of line.
You're listening to Sherry Gendelman, who is the chair of the Local Advisory Board for KPFA. And to review the events here on March the 31st, Lynn Chadwick fired Nicole Sawaya, who was then manager of KPFA. The station staff responded very angrily. We liked this manager, and we've never been given a reason for her firing. Then some days after that, Larry Bensky was fired for actually talking about this on the air. We had been ordered not to talk about it. The news department was ordered immediately not to talk about it, and of course did do news stories, has done news stories ongoingly. And then Friday the 18th, Robbie Osmond was removed from the air for also speaking out against this gag order, all on the same topic. And it's so far beyond Nicole Sawaya and her firing or her future or non-future at KPFA. It seems to have really galvanized people's feelings about the national control over local airwaves and whether or not it's gotten out of control. And Larry, if you want to throw in your two cents at this point, I know you have a personal story and a personal stake in how this all comes out, but it is far bigger than you.
Well, it's far bigger than any of us. It's, as we'll hear from Ralph Engelman in a moment, it's a historical time. He's going to have to add at least one chapter onto the revised edition of his book about the politics of public radio and television in America, because what the Pacifica Foundation has in effect done is, first of all, suspended freedom of speech. Then they put security guards in this building, so they've suspended freedom of association. This has always been an open place. And then finally, they arrest people for protesting and they suspend freedom of assembly. So what this organization, a supposedly progressive, political-oriented organization headed by a woman who's the head of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission is doing is violating our civil rights. And how much more absurd can you get? So I think, you don't have to be a constitutional lawyer to understand what's going on here. There's a power grab that's taken place. Among people who are not responsive and not representative of the communities where these stations are, they've hired themselves and their cronies, and they've increased the staff from 3 to 14 people over the last 10 years, plus 6 or 8 consultants. They keep their budget secrets. They hire each other. They don't go through public procedures, even in their meetings, as Sherry was saying. And now we're faced with a situation where they say, well, screw you to the community. We don't like your listeners anymore. We won't tolerate any of this protest. We're going to get you arrested. Close the doors, lock the doors, and you will follow orders. And if there's one thing that listeners to Pacifica Radio don't like...
Or staffs.
It's that kind of authoritarian, unconstitutional behavior. It's crazy. Ralph, how do we get to this place?
Well, now, wait a minute. Let me ask the questions, please, Larry, or at least at the moment.
I want to hear Ralph.
Larry Bensky, well, I do, too. And I want to... We were going to go back to... sooner or later, we will discuss exactly how, in the last 10 years, the national staff went from 3 to 14. How and why? Because there was some agreement there, and there seems to be... I don't know if the agreement on the goal has changed or if we're mostly disagreeing about how we're getting there. But before we go to that topic, I would like to talk to Ralph Engelman, who joins us on the telephone once again, the author of Public Radio and Television in America, Political History. Ralph, you said that you were on the local board for WBAI and as well as on the national board. And this change that the lawsuit is talking about in the bylaws, would you have been on the national board then? How has this bylaw changed the experience that you had?
Now you're talking about the bylaw, the business about local board members not being on the national board.
Yeah,
that is of. I think it's very problematic, and I should, preface it by saying that from what I could tell, and I've been observing this more from afar, I'm still involved sort of indirectly with Pacifica and with BAI and involved with the capital campaign for their move, but I haven't been party to a lot of the documents and all the rest. But my impression is that already under Pat Scott's administration as the executive director, there was a fairly conscious attempt to downgrade the authority of the local advisory boards, which, you know, had up until that point, they played a pretty important role, overseeing budgets, approving budgets, which before they went to the national board, then monitoring them, essentially, you know, playing an important role in the selection of managers, hiring and firing of managers, and that sort of thing. And then you had back when I was involved, two local board members would be sent to the national board, and yes, the national board is the licensee, but those national board members would represent the station and were to a certain degree accountable to it. We met with the staff, they knew us, we knew them, so forth and so on. And there was, you know, a change in Pacifica, I guess, bylaws that taking away a lot of this authority and basically giving the local boards a sort of amorphous responsibility for discussing programming. Now, then the business of removing national board members from the local board because of CPB guidelines and the legislation of 1978 is, you know, a further blow. You know, from my own study of public mainstream public broadcasting, the reason that CPB and the legislators set things up this way is the local board, as far as they're concerned, is to serve really as a kind of a democratic fig leaf, a sort of safety valve, but not, you know, have any clout with the governance. And I think it's important that, however this gets resolved, that national board members be, you know, have a relationship with stations, with the local boards. You know, I think that's very important.
One thing we should intersect here, because I know a lot of people don't know a lot of the inside baseball we're talking about here. CPB is the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. It provides approximately 17% of the money that Pacifica spends a year, in return for which there are certain, obviously, governmental agreements you have to follow, one of which was interpreted, and that's very controversial, is what the lawsuit is about, as saying that local people could not serve in the local advisory board on the national board. Then CPB backed off of that in correspondence that's available on the web, and we'll give you website addresses in a little while, and said that this was just something that was invented by the management of Pacifica. There's a million ways you could have gotten around this. Why did you do it this way? So it becomes a question of, do we want the federal government in the form of CPB to tell us how to run and administer our stations in exchange for about $1 million a year? Or we say, keep your $1 million, we'll just run it by ourselves.
Of course, it's easy for KPFA to say, keep your $1 million, because we don't use CPB fundings. There, however, are five stations in the Pacifica network, and they have completely separate personalities and needs and geographies and listenerships, and at least three of those five stations are very dependent on CPB.
Well,
funding.
Money is fungible, Chris. When you say we don't use it, it pays for national programming in part, for example. It pays for the outrageous bloated bureaucracy of our national office. It all goes into the same pot. Fact of the matter is that I think, given the support that KPFA has had over the past few months, if we said goodbye CPB money and we went on the air and asked the listeners to make it up, they'd make it up in a heartbeat.
Just yeah,
to
but get Houston's it. Listeners
it wouldn't be true
would
in
not.
Houston. It wouldn't That's be true right. in D.C., right?
Well, let me say a word about that money. I think that this is taxpayers' money, and I think that Pacifica should get that money certainly as much as any NPR station. But we have to be very careful. CPB is a very complex organization. It's chartered as a supposedly a non-governmental and non-commercial entity, but in fact, you know, it's funded very much like a government agency with by appropriations from Congress, with the with congressional oversight. Its board is appointed by the president with the advice and consent of the Senate, and it's many of its top officials are people with government backgrounds, with backgrounds in the United States Information Agency and all the rest. And to, you know, to relate this to the larger picture, Pacifica was created really to be a truly, fully independent journalistic and broadcasting instrument, you know, that took the First Amendment First Amendment seriously, and had, and part and parcel of that is having an adversarial relationship with the government. So we have to be very careful. We have to walk a certain walk and talk a certain talk in our relations with FCC and CPB, but at the same time, you know, we have to be guard our prerogatives jealously, and as Larry said, object when they tried to basically tell us how we should organize ourselves, particularly when you keep in mind that it was Pacifica that not only invented public broadcasting or started it, but really invented the local advisory board as well. And I'm concerned that some of the, of you know, recent, especially our last two executive directors, and I don't mean to, you know, attack them personally, but these are, have been people who have been very much involved in a more professional kind of level with public broadcasting, with mainstream public broadcasting, with institutions such as CPB.
Exactly. You're listening to Ralph Engelman, our guest on the telephone, a professor of journalism. He'll be back with us. Larry Bensky is here in studio, I'm very happy to say. And Sherry Gendelman, the chair of our local board, on the phone. And we'll be back with your phone-in questions. Please don't go away.
And it's 12:22. You're listening to KPFA, KPFB in Berkeley, and KFCF in Fresno. And thank you to the more than 7,000 people who made pledges during KPFA's spring fund drive. Over 6,200 of you pledged under protest, stating your support for the KPFA staff and our demands of the Pacifica Foundation. And it has never been more important to follow through on that pledge. Thanks very much. Please pay your pledge right away. Back to Living Room with Chris Welch very shortly.
Welcome back to Living Room. I'm Chris Welch, here in-house Larry Bensky, the originator of this program. Very happy to have him back in whatever guise here so far. We're hoping to get him back on staff doing his Sunday Salon.
Guise of protester.
Yeah, okay, protester, that's right. With us on the telephone, Ralph Engelman, professor of journalism, chair of the journalism department at Long Island University Brooklyn campus, served on the board of WBAI, our sister station in New York, also on the National Pacifica National Board, which is meeting, gathering to meet beginning tomorrow, even as we speak, and the author of Public Radio and Television America Political History. On the telephone with us as well, Sherry Gendelman, the chair of the local advisory board for KPFA. And I'd like to get to the core of what I see as the debate here. Ralph just mentioned that the last two executive directors were sort of going in one direction. And Sherry, I'd like you to, or perhaps Larry, but to remind us, there was some consensus among the five stations, among all of the elements of Pacifica during the Reagan years, that we needed to be stronger. We needed a stronger national presence, that the country needed us, as it were, and that our very small listenerships, all the five stations, including this one, were too small, and that we should grow, and that we wanted a national programming to be able to send out to other stations so that the people that were in KPFA's listening audience wouldn't be the only ones who could hear what's on Pacifica Radio. So there was this agreement to do this. And then It's marched forward, and we seem to be arguing over the details of how it's marched forward. Sherry, is that safe to say?
Yes, that was very safe to say, Chris. I'm going to let Larry respond to some of the history around this. I would say that many of us who object to the manner in which Pacifica is managing its stations do not object to a strong governing body that would, in fact, develop programs that would further the mission of Pacifica, that is to promote a better understanding among peoples, discuss issues of peace, etc. However, at the time that the National Office is growing its staff and growing its budget and increasing the tax it extracts from the stations, they have only gone from a half hour of national programming to an hour of and a half, and one of the people on the air with us today, Larry Bensky, was fired from the National Office, so thereby reducing the programs that they produce. I think that their focus is completely distorted. It would be great to have a sophisticated National Pacifica office that was capable of producing programs that are compelling, politically or culturally interesting, and that serves the needs of its audience and furthers our agenda. I don't see that happening.
And the reason... Go ahead, Chris.
Well, it feels like at one point National was there to serve the stations, and now it's flipped completely around, and the stations are supposed to be serving National.
And that is exactly the problem.
Mm-hmm.
When we, I mean, I have a lot of historical knowledge about a lot of this, and eventually, Ralph, if you don't write another chapter, I'm going to have to write it for you. Because what happened back in 1977 when I was station manager of KPFA is we decided we needed an executive director for Pacifica. We'd never had one for the first 25 years of our organization's existence. And we needed it precisely so that we could coordinate the various legal and political and programming actions that the stations were taking.
So it's your fault, Larry.
Partially. And the executive, well, you might say in another sense, maybe it isn't, because I was offered the job and had the good sense to turn it down. So I could have been Pacifica's first executive director, but I wasn't. And we wanted an executive director so that we wouldn't have to reinvent the wheel all the time and keep talking among ourselves, et cetera, et cetera. And the executive director's job and the national office job is to serve the stations. Now it's come, as you say, full circle. The national office is there to dictate to the stations not only what we should program, but who should walk in the building.
And how much we should pay them.
And how much we should pay them. It's all become a dictatorship, top down, which is completely antithetical to Pacifica traditions and to what we were trying to do. As for programming, the era, which again Ralph writes about in his book here, about when Pacifica had a real turning point, was back in 87. When we had the Iran-Contra hearings on the air, and as Ralph, you write in your book, we had a huge jump in audience. People in Pacifica began to see, hey, we don't have to just be local. We can go national with these hearings and other things like this from Washington. How do we keep this audience was the question. And as in many things, and here, I, as usual, I'm a vulgar Marxist in recovery, so I have to always come back to economic determinism. We raised $110,000 during the Iran-Contra hearings with our 800 number on the air. The hearings cost us about $55,000, which, as you point out in your book, Ralph, wouldn't have paid, the whole cost of our doing the hearings wouldn't have paid for one anchor's salary on a TV network. But the two of us did it, Bill Wax and myself. We had a surplus, and we came back here, and David Solomick, the executive director, said, okay, we can do more national programming as long as we can continue to raise money. From that came a whole long series of discussions and debates, a drafting of a national programming agenda. National programming was never envisaged as taking over a big part of any station's air. It was for special broadcasts, for a national talk show, which took us 10 years to develop and took Pacifica on a year and a half to kill, which was mine, for something like Amy Goodman's program, Democracy Now!, and the national news. That's what we wanted to have. It was never, we're going to take it over with national programming. And
okay,
then we could not reach consensus because we did not have leadership. Leadership was too busy building its bureaucracy to deal with radio. And if you look at who's in these 14 positions at Pacifica right now, there isn't one single programming person among them.
Or even any Pacifica people among them.
No, they all come from outside. They hire each other, and they're all there for a year, a year and a half. It's
Ralph
crazy.
Engelman, let me ask you, with all of these details here, do you think that... it's possible or desirable for Pacifica to grow its audience. We were talking about how do we keep the audience that we have. In fact, our audience has not grown. At moments that Larry was describing, then all of a sudden we'll get a big audience. But basically, the audience has remained the same. We have the same small sliver of America listening to Pacifica. How do we grow, or should we even grow?
I think we should grow, but I would emphasize sort of the qualitative aspects of growth as opposed to the quantitative aspects. I think, sure, it's important to grow, and Pacifica in the past has grown. In the early years of Pacifica, I think that many of the listeners were sort of upper middle class whites, who intellectuals, academics, and in the 1960s, Pacifica grew in the sense that it brought in, as listeners, and then later as programmers and staff, more people of color, more women, and our audience has, you know, grown and changed. And of course, it needs to grow and become greater. It disturbs me to hear, as I did yesterday, that WBAI only has right now 16,000 subscribers, and we need to get bigger. But I think it's important not to make a fetish out of growth, because historically, the impact that, you know, independent and alternative media have had has not been a function of how large the audience is. And we can't, I mean, this is partially what's happened in mainstream public broadcasting, is looking at CUMs and looking at all those numbers. I think it's important that we find a way to do our work, have independent support for it. And that, the impact of that is often way beyond, you know, because there are sort of levels or layers of impact. When Amy Goodman breaks a story about the only journalist in the world, literally, who covers, let's say, a massacre in Nigeria that Chevron orchestrates, this makes a lot of waves. And so that I think size by itself is, again, we can't make a fetish out of it. At the same time, we want to expand our listeners. We want to strengthen, you know, our listener support. I think also we want the Pacifica the affiliates and people that carry Democracy Now! And other programs, that the message is getting out. And Pacifica has played and will continue to play, hopefully, a very important and very unique role in American communications, American broadcasting. We're the only national, you know, more or less, you know, progressive, independent institution. We have to stay that way, and to emphasize numbers, it has to be at least whatever growth has to be in relation to our mission. It can't be sort of numbers for its own sake.
Right. Now, I just want to add there that I completely agree with you, and that my concern is that Pacifica, the governing board, seems to be in the hands of people who are contemptuous of the mission of Pacifica. And the proof of that is their behavior towards those of us who have raised very validly our concerns about the direction they are taking this organization in. They seem to have contempt for grassroots organizing and the expression of free speech and the very ideals that we broadcast over our airways on a daily basis.
And regardless of what they seem or how they appear, the facts are that there is no local input, and there seems to be no accountability. Am I overstating it, Sherry?
No, not at all. The most recent changes in February of 1999 completely eliminated the last connection that the governing board had to its community, and our ability, as represented by the local advisory boards, to select members of the governing board.
The phone number here is area code 510-848-4425, 510-848-4425, listener-sponsored radio. Sherry, before we, Larry's got something to say, but on the national board right now, because you're in some kind of contact with them, what do you think the attitudes are about growth? I know they don't seem to want any debate or argument or questions raised, but...
Well, I think that they are using growth, among other things, to justify actions that they have taken to eliminate democratic input from the communities. But I would say that we're dealing now with a board that is divided. I don't know if it's going to be a board divided as bitterly as the Supreme Court in their 5-4 decisions. But I would say that we do have support and members on the governing board that oppose this blind march forward.
Especially the tactics that have been used.
It's a blind march backwards. I mean, how bad can it get? You know, here's an article in the San Francisco Chronicle yesterday where Ilhan Fabri, you know, Chadwick and Mary Frances Berry usually aren't available to talk to the press or don't trust themselves to talk to the press, so they've hired a spokesperson who in her other job represents Oakland's leading Republican, a real suitable person to have speaking for Pacifica. She says that the petition, which has now been signed by hundreds of people, including Dolores Huerta and David Brower and Daniel Ellsberg and many others, asking Lynn Chadwick to resign as an unsuitable executive director. Fabri, the publicity person for Pacifica, says, oh, these are lifetime activists. That's what's wrong. They're lifetime activists. Lifetime activism is what this network is about. How could you have somebody who puts people down for being lifetime activists and dismisses their petition to get rid of this completely unsuitable person who's the executive director?
You know, I think that if we start mentioning comments made by
members of the governing board
or their spokesperson, it will take up the rest of the hour. They don't like us. They don't respect our culture. They abhor grassroots democracy, and they're not fond of the First Amendment.
And they're going to be meeting starting today, and I want to just get this in a couple of times because I know there's some people from experience that don't listen to all of Living Room. They're meeting today, starting today, at the Embassy Suites in Washington, D.C. Now, get something to write with, folks. I'll mention this again before the program ends
tomorrow
once or twice.
They begin meeting, Larry.
Well, some of them start arriving today.
You can send,
yes, they start arriving today. The meetings begin tomorrow. And you can fax them what you want to say to them at area code 202-293-3173.
3173,
yeah.
Okay.
Make sure
that's the fax number. I want to go to callers. Area Ed in Redwood City, we'll give you that number again. Ed, welcome to Living Room.
Yeah, thanks. This is brief. It's clear that there are decisions made that are harmful to KPFA, just as a listener. And certainly the dismissal of Larry Bensky is paramount as a listener. We're getting a lot of details. You're close, obviously, to this. Do you think this is merely an internal political squabble, or is there something greater afoot?
Now, who are you asking that?
Anybody.
I think that there's something greater afoot. I definitely think that there is. Perhaps these people, I mean, they haven't revealed their plans or their intentions, but I think that there are a limited number of options. Perhaps they want to turn it into simply a national office that produces a series of milquetoast kinds of liberal programming and compete with NPR. Perhaps they want to turn it into or have it designated, or most of the stations, as you know, are designated as minority stations. Make it a milquetoast network of stations that are designated by CPB as minority stations.
And get money, therefore.
And get money and have to raise less money, because minority stations have less of a requirement in terms of the money they have to raise.
Less responsive to listeners, then.
Right. I personally don't think it's more nefarious than that.
Well, that's pretty nefarious, and I want to say something here that I haven't really discussed on the air before, but I've gotten dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of communications by email and telephone about this. When I was first fired back in December, people may remember that was right when we were beginning the throes of our impeachment hearings. And I was rehired after a huge outcry here in Northern California 2 weeks later.
Larry, Ilhan Fabri said that had nothing to do with
it. Yeah, I know she said it had nothing to do with it. She also said I was never fired. At the time, people were writing and saying, well, they may want to get you off the air at the time of impeachment because you have been very critical of President Clinton in the past. Mary Frances Berry is a straight-line liberal Democrat, friend of Vernon Jordan, friend of the Clintons. You go on the air and you say you don't care if Clinton gets impeached because you say he's a war criminal and stop him before he bombs again. And by the way, was I right or wrong on that one? And they don't want you to be on the air anchoring impeachment. They want to get people who don't have your background and your credibility on the air on national programming. And so even though I was rehired then and we started Sunday Salon, it was made clear to me by Lynn Chadwick that I no longer would anchor national special programs, I who had basically invented the genre. Why did I go along with that? Because I thought that Lynn Chadwick was going to be here for a very short period of time, and I still think she is, and it's lengthened unconscionably. But there is a contention, and you have to now consider it as possible in this mix, that they got rid of me because they didn't want somebody who wasn't, who had the credibility that I have in Washington and nationwide, and who was going to go on the air during impeachment and not just say, oh, how terrible is it they're persecuting Clinton, but was going to say, hey, this guy is a really flawed president and a bad human being, and let's keep this in perspective.
Larry, really? You think Mary Frances Berry would do that? Of course,
I think she called Janet Reno in a heartbeat, and I think that's perhaps what happened yesterday.
I couldn't agree more. We will be right back with more of your phone-in questions. Sorry we haven't gotten to so many of you, but as you can tell, we got a lot of talkers here. Don't go away.
And it's 1240. This is KPFA, KPFB in Berkeley, and KFCF in Fresno. You're living to a live and lively living room today with Chris Welch and special host Larry Bensky. We'll return in a few short seconds.
Welcome back to Living Room. The phone number here is 510-848-4425. We're talking about the conflict between KPFA and its license holder, Pacifica, and Jude in Oakland is on the line. Welcome to Living Room.
Hi, everybody. I have one statement of fear and two quick questions. My statement of fear is that I hear from a friend today that all the letters and emails I've been writing over the past few weeks are now in the hands of cops somewhere. Is that true? And two, my question is, Barry is citing racial, misproportions at KPFA as something she wants to correct, and I want to know if you could talk about the relevance of that to her actions.
Yeah, I sure will, and I'd like everybody, including you, to go on our website and see the letter that the African-American programmers here at KPFA wrote saying that they will not be divided and used in that manner. Our website is www.savepacifica.net. www.savepacifica.net. And just let me say this about that question, because this is really infuriating. Mary Frances Berry, chair of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission, marched with Martin, got arrested at the South African embassy. What's the first thing that happens when she takes over as chair of the board? Her then executive director, Pat Scott, installs Lynn Chadwick as acting manager of KPFA, and she fires Barry Scott, probably the leading African-American in community broadcasting in the United States at the time. Then Nicole Sawaya comes in and hires our first African-American program director, and then they fire me, and Lauren Shorter, the program director, comes in my office, closes the door, and says, I'm quitting, because if they can do this to you, our most popular programmer, what can they do to me? I've only been here 6 months. I can't build a career in a place like this that can throw you, Larry Bensky, out the door on a two-sentence memo after 30 years. That takes care of the African-American program director here. Then my producer, Cheryl Flowers, 8 years, exactly the kind of person we should be developing in Pacifica. 8 years, flashpoints, producer, co-host, original producer of Living Room, stays on Sunday Salon, gets promoted to be co-host of the morning show. She quits. Why? Because she says that what Mary Frances Berry and Lynn Chadwick have done around here at KPFA is so toxic to her and people of color and non-people of color that she doesn't want to work here anymore, and she goes and gets a job in Washington. You tell me how that advances minority so-called programming in Pacifica. It's a disgrace.
I want to add one thing here, because it's a very, very painful and difficult issue, the issue of race. Establishing the other station as minority stations so that they wouldn't have to raise as much money to meet CTV guidelines for matching funds is a good and a bad thing, because it is now being used against us to say that to introduce the issue of race here in a way into a progressive community, and it's a very painful situation. Mary Frances Berry did not respond to the memo from the African American programmers. and has given no indication that she will. And I think that she will use the race card to her advantage and to our disadvantage, introducing it as an element here, as if we are the ones that are perpetuating some abuse here. In terms of the police or anybody else having access to your emails, I sure hope your grammar was correct. We don't have any information about that. They have made statements that they have asked the Berkeley police to check all of the emails because of a bullet that was fired at the building. Now, the Berkeley police have not made a determination about that. It's just as possible that the shots fired at the building had nothing to do with this struggle whatsoever, though they are hiding behind that incident to defend any and all actions they take to suppress the protesters and to further stigmatize
them. And we should say that the security guards went up a month after that incident, and throughout that time, the spokespeople for Pacifica were saying, Berkeley police say they're investigating a homicide. Berkeley police say nothing of the sort. Elan Fabry of Pacifica says that. Berkeley police say what they're investigating is shootings into an unoccupied structure.
Okay, and we're going to go
very different from a homicide.
We're going to go on to another caller here. Margaret in Oakland, welcome to Living Room.
Hi, thank you. I'm really glad you're talking about this and putting your money where your mouth is, so to speak. And I have been really frustrated during all this to not get any information about the history of the board itself. I know that KPFA started out as a kitchen table operation 50 years ago in Berkeley and so forth. And how did it get to where it had a national board that is not elected, or, you know, how is it selected, appointed, whatever? And it's also very frustrating that all I can do is withhold my money or give my money, and that's the only way I can vote.
Well, and you can write and fax and phone call all that stuff, although no one's gotten a response.
Right.
So,
but I
hear you.
I give, you know, I got a good education from the state of California. I make a nice salary, and I contribute proportionally to KPFA because I believe in it. So,
yes, it's extremely frustrating that 17% of every dollar you contribute goes to national when we're in.
Well,
I hear you.
I'm not necessarily complaining about that. Well, I'm talking about you guys. If you would please tell us more about the history of the board,
okay,
how it came about from the very beginning to where it is now.
Okay, let me ask Ralph Engelman to answer
Chris,
that one.
I'm going to leave the airways now.
You're going
to
leave.
I have to go to a hearing.
Okay, kiddo. Thanks
Sherry, for all your
Sherry
hard
Gettleman,
work.
The chair of the local advisory board, Ralph Engelman.
Well, just a quick answer. I mean, someone has to be the licensee for a radio station. Lewis Hill really conceived the Pacific of being a model of other stations, and other stations within the Pacific, a kind of framework, a rubric, were established. And there is this one entity. It was no conspiracy, but just the nature, the fact of becoming now a national organization, there is one board. I don't think this is necessarily a bad thing if, you know, there's a structure in which there is a communication, you know, and representation from the local to the national. I think anyone who is interested and serious about politics realizes the advantages of a national entity, not that it should, you know, create uniformity in the system. In terms of sending your money, and I'm not familiar with a lot of the details, and I don't feel I should, you know, tell people what they should do with their money. But in general, I think we have to take the long view, and we're engaged in a struggle about the future of Pacifica. It's related to a struggle about the future of this country, and I think it's very important to keep Pacifica going and not, you know, so that it's so we have the time to create the Pacifica we want. Because unlike a publication, a radio station, once it's lost, it's gone. It can't be resurrected that easily. There have been, I talk about them in the book, there have been other times in Pacifica history were very unprincipled, horrible things have been done, a certain element of collusion with the Senate Internal Securities Committee years
right.
ago. When Chris Koch went to Vietnam, very early, Pacifica local board, BAI board, and national board didn't get it, and he was, so there have been, you know, but the notion, I think that the idea of Pacifica, we should just bring it down. I don't think anyone's really saying that, but I think we have to be careful and to keep the thing going while we struggled to make it what it should be.
Thank you. Ralph Engelman joins us on the phone. Public Radio and Television in America, Political History is his book. It's published by Sage. Larry Bensky here in studio and Sydney in San Francisco on the line. Welcome to Living Room. Sydney, are you there? Oh, Sydney.
Hello.
No. Hello, go ahead.
Yeah. I got a letter from one board member, but in response to my emails.
A national board member?
I will look that up while we're talking, or I'll get back to you with it, Chris.
Okay.
But it was not a response to my letter. It was a, this is the letter I'm sending to people who send letters like you do. And it responded to none of the particulars of my mail, which is exactly the way I do not expect to be treated by anyone around KPFA.
Exactly.
It's terrible. We see a lot of the responses.
Roberta Brooks.
Well, she's since resigned from the board, although she may or may not be present.
On Monday.
And she was on the local board here, too. She was one of the Berkeley people.
Yeah, and that's a whole long story, too, about how she got there and how she was unrepresentative was assailed for this by people who were opposed to what's going on and decided to resign. Now, apparently, her resignation either has or hasn't been accepted. She may or may not be in Washington. I don't even know that. The point is there are going to be 15 board members in Washington. We've received indications from many of them, including the two from our Signal area, that they are extremely upset at what Chadwick has done at the behest of Mary Frances Berry. And they're going to make as much of a fuss in Washington about this as they can. They need our support. Their names are on the website, the 15 board members that I've directed you how to get, www.savepacifica.net. If you want a physical copy of this list, you can come to our rally this afternoon in front of the building. We've had them just about every day, and I'll be at today's as well, starting at 4:30, right here at 1929 Martin Luther King Jr. Way. We're sending six or seven people, including a staff member from KPFA, two people from our local advisory board and others, one member of KPFA management. We're sending them to Washington, D.C. on our own money that we've raised apart from KPFA.
And they're going to be scrambling to get in front of the microphone.
And they're going to be
like
scrambling to get into those
February.
Closed meetings. And when I went up in front of that microphone and I said, look, the problem with this organization is you guys have become a secretive, authoritarian, unresponsive, self-perpetuating, wasteful bureaucracy. Mary Frances Berry, whom I have known for years, got up and walked out of the room and hasn't spoken to me since. Now, or to anybody else. She hasn't come out here in the course of this 2 months of crisis.
Although she said she would at one point.
She's been spoken to by just about anybody who can get near her, and then she stopped speaking to people. This is an outrageously unresponsive organization right now, and it will kill KPFA and Pacifica unless we change it. So I can't tell you how urgent it is to call the embassy suites in Washington and get the names of the board members off the website. Their phone number there is 202-857-3388. 202-857-3388. Their fax number once again, 202-293-3173. And if you faxed and written and emailed before, send it to them again. Send them an update. Tell them how you feel about people getting arrested in front of this building for freedom of assembly, for having security guards put in here so that people have to sneak in the building.
I've got callers on the line, and let's try to, well, anyway, Mike in San Francisco, go ahead.
Yeah, here's a question for Ralph, and then I'll make a statement about an idea I've had. Ralph, I'm asking Ralph... with the idea in mind of sparing the others having to answer this question on the air. And the question is, how much do we pay Lynn Chadwick and Mary Frances Berry? Now, the statement I have is that I think we ought to be working in solidarity with the hundreds of thousands of listeners in New York of BAI. I know they're having similar problems, but what I'm wondering is the KPFA story out there? Being discussed in New York?
It wasn't up until today, apparently.
That's
it was
a question for Ralph. Ralph, go ahead.
Okay, well, first of all, you know, I'm not on the national board presently. I haven't been on the national board for about 20 years. So I don't know how much Pacifica executive director is being paid, but the KPFA issue is one that is being followed very closely and much discussed in New York and throughout Pacifica.
Flynn Chadwick makes between $72,000 and $77,000 a year. We're not exactly sure how much because, of course, they don't give us financial details. Mary Frances Berry is not paid.
She's a volunteer. And you said it was on WBA, but
this morning it was on. I understand Dennis Bernstein was on all night on talk shows, and on the morning show today, Bernard White discussed it, and even Amy Goodman, who shied away from this issue, did a little something on Democracy Now! Today.
Anna in San Francisco, welcome to Living Room.
Yes, I just want to make this real quick. It's also, I want to thank you for your inspiring bravery doing this. I'll just take the answer off the air real quickly. I was at my niece's graduation at Redwood High School in Marin last week, and several of the kids' speeches mentioned their sadness at losing three of their top best favorite teachers who were fired for absolutely no reason at all, except that they were, quote, not a good fit. Okay, that's it.
Bye. Yeah, it happens a lot. Gail in Berkeley, welcome to KPFA.
Yes, thank you. As a longtime supporter, both the listener and financially, I have a basic question that no one's answered for me before, and that is, could KPFA legally separate from Pacifica? And if so, I think we both should, and we should refuse to accept any government money.
It would require a license challenge, which would be almost certain to fail. It cannot, legally, of course, you could file for it, but then Pat Robertson could file for it, too, and guess who would have more clout in getting it. It never has been a feasible option, as far as I know.
Jack and Santa...
too, as far as I'm concerned.
Jack and Santa Rosa, welcome to Living Room.
Well, thank you for your efforts there. I am very grateful. I've been listening to your station for over 30 years. I'm no wild-eyed wobbly. I have two items for you. I understand that Ms. Berry is affiliated with the University of Pennsylvania.
Yes.
I will give you the number of the Board of Trustees head, as well as his website number, which I dug up this morning. His phone number.
What's his name?
Rogers. J.K. Rogers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Make it snappy.
1-5.
I beg your pardon? What 5?
215.
215.
That's a Philadelphia number,
yeah.
I believe. 215-898-7005.
7005. Okay, we're going to have to go because I want to give the last question here to Ralph Engelman, our guest on the phone. You've said several times, and I want to end with this, about the role of Pacifica in the future of this country. It just seems that this is such a precious institution. Remind us of its uniqueness.
Well, okay, I mean, put it this way. In terms of its past 50 years, Pacifica was the most important institution, bar none, in broadcasting, national institution, in fighting the politics and the culture of the Cold War. I think, if anything, Pacifica can and should play at least, if not a more vital role in the future. The blacklist continues in sort of more indirect, insidious ways in terms of certain ideas and perspectives that cannot be put on the airwaves. I think that we have a level of manipulation and control of the news, for example, having to do with when American soldiers are engaged in conflicts abroad that is unprecedented in American history. You've got a incredible concentration of communications entities. And
Ralph, we only have a minute left, and I really need to give out this website information one more time. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you and I will chat, I hope, on the air as soon as I'm back again on the air here. For people who haven't yet signed up and want to get the information that we have, you can just write to us at savepacifica@earthlink.net. That's savepacifica@earthlink.net. Our website, if you have web access, www.savepacifica.net.
And that is Larry Bensky, former host of this program, and I thank you very much for listening. The beat goes on. The National Board meets this weekend, and we'll talk to you after that, I'm sure, more on this topic. Thank you so very much for listening to Living Room. I'm Chris Welch. Our producer is Judy Campbell. Barbara Fisher is at the controls. Don't forget, today, 4:30 outside the station, a rally in support of listener-sponsored radio.
And don't forget, the staff of this listener-sponsored Pacifica radio station, KPFA-FM, is affiliated with the Communication Workers of America. That's CWA Local 9415. Take care.